This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story. We break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's basically what this is. It's a lot of talking.
I've never heard this. A lot of chatting.
I've heard this. I've heard this song. It's a great song. I love these.
Around the back, just a couple miles from the railroad tracks. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Rest in peace, Alice.
This is the background of the Arcan Thanksgiving party.
We'd find it on the radio.
Okay.
Because every radio station plays this. Every music station plays this on Thanksgiving. And when we'd be driving to, I have relatives in Rhode Island, in different places, whenever we go there, my father would always find it on one of the radio stations, and we'd listen to the whole thing. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I was going to say, you know every single word, so it was okay, kids, all together now.
I don't think I know every single word because it's very long, and it's this like long rambling story.
Yeah.
About how he dumps garbage. Spoiler alert: they dump garbage near the restaurant, and then the cops find him and they arrest him for littering. And it's right around the time of the draft, so because he got arrested, he doesn't have to get drafted and go fight in Vietnam. It's this whole thing.
It's kind of
a protest song.
What makes it a Thanksgiving song?
Because it happened at Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
It's set around Thanksgiving. Okay.
It's a little bit like my favorite Christmas song,
the
Dan Fogelberg, which really has nothing to do with Christmas other than it's near Christmas, or Die Hard. Why is it a Die Hard movie? Because it's Christmas party.
It's Christmas. Alice Brock, by the way, whose Massachusetts-based restaurant helped inspire Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant, died at the age of 83 last week. It was announced Friday. Her name was Alice Mae Pelkey. She was born in New York City, a lifelong rebel who was a member of the Students of a Democratic Society, among other organizations, in the early 1960s. She dropped out of Sarah Lawrence, moved to Greenwich Village, and married Ray Brock, a woodworker who encouraged her to leave New York and resettle in Massachusetts. Massachusetts royalty right there. Alice Brock, rest in peace. And we will be playing Alice's Restaurant all day long tomorrow in your honor. There you go. So, with that out of the way, usually at 4 o'clock we talk to Scal. He's being moved over to 4:30, so we will talk to him then and get into some Celtics thoughts as well. All the Celtics thoughts right now is positive. I'm very thankful for the Celtics today. You know, you go over what you're thankful for each Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful for the Boston Celtics. I'm thankful for Wick Grosbeck. I'm thankful for Irv Grosbeck. I'm thankful for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Derek White and Kristaps Porzingis and Peyton Pritchard and Drew Holiday and the whole team, really. I mean, there's not much to really look at with this team and not be thankful for, right? Especially when you consider the current state of these other three teams here in town and how one of them's in a rebuild and it's not going great. One of them should be in a rebuild, but doesn't realize it yet, and they're still paying a ton of money and completely crapping out right now. And then there's the Red Sox, who I don't know if you want to call it a rebuild because they're not a team that's tearing down their roster, I wouldn't say, but they are a team that's looking to add. And when you add a lot of big name fans, people consider that a rebuild. So they have to actually do it in order for it to be a rebuild. Otherwise, it's just dragging your feet along and doing more of the same stuff that got you to being a 500 team for the last 3 years with a couple of last place finishes, which is unfortunate. I'm very thankful for the Celtics today.
You should be.
Without the Celtics, it would be a pretty dismal outlook. It'd be a pretty grim outlook here in Boston sports.
Well, we'd be even more embarrassingly all in on Drake May, I feel like. I feel like we're putting even more balls in that basket 6 games into his career when he turns the ball over and doesn't really win. And I think we're already tiptoeing in that direction, maybe putting a little too much stock in his early career performances. But yeah, like there's a huge drop off to second place in terms of entertainment value. Yeah. You know, I always go back to entertainment value. If you said, what do you feel pretty comfortable saying you're going to be entertained by? 2 hours of the Celtics, 2 hours of the Bruins, 3 hours of the Patriots, or eventually 2 hours of the Red Sox? It's the Celtics. It's the not Celtics. Close.
Yeah, although they blow people up so much by the time it's the fourth quarter you got.
But
you
that's know. Entertaining.
It is.
Remember the 07 Patriots?
Yep.
The first like 2 months of the season? That's entertaining.
It is.
Knowing your team is the bully, is the king of the mountain, is the measuring stick, is fun. And then you have that every once in a while where they toy with somebody and it's close early and you're like, oh no, are they going to? No, they're not. They're going to have a bunch of points in the second quarter or the third quarter, they're going to pull away. You know, they get a healthy guy back.
51 in the second 2 nights ago, yes.
Or even in the, we've reached the point you watch the garbage time and see how that plays out and who's going to score and who's going to, or are we going for a threes record in this game?
Right.
So they have so many layers of entertainment value, but also the most important thing is they marry it up with they're chasing a banner. They're the defending champions who are the projected champions this year. It's pretty high on your horse right there. That's
absolutely
a good spot to be.
Even the Bruins, when they're good, and I'm using good in quotes here, like even that year where they set the regular season record, we all were kind of like, well, let's see how they do in the playoffs. It's really all about the playoffs. The playoffs went about as badly as they possibly could. But even then, even if they had won a round, you still would be going, okay, they got to hold on here. They're going to do it. You don't feel that way about the Celtics.
Because they won.
With the Celtics, who's going to knock them off? Who can beat them?
But we felt that way last year. There was still doubt because they hadn't finished.
Right.
We're still questioning Jason Tatum. Is he the alpha? Mm-hmm. Can he lead them to a title? Now, I guess the question is, did he lead them to a title? Can he actually lead them to a title the second time around? But there would be a lot more questions about this Celtics team, obviously, if they hadn't won last year. But they did win. So that buys everybody a certain cachet and swagger that they're taking full advantage of. And then you get into, because you're not so anxious about the results, because you pretty much assume they're going to, now you start to be like, hey, that Derek White guy, he should be an all-star this year.
Yeah.
Our fifth best player's an all-star. That's how good we are. Or the personalities.
You think he's their fifth best player? Or were you just saying that?
I was just throwing it out there because
I think he's their third best player.
He probably is. Yeah. But it sounds cooler if your fifth best player's an all-star.
It does sound
That's why I kind of did it that way. But you're right. Because Drew Holiday hasn't actually been great this year.
Offensively, he's not been doing a lot. I mean, he's the point guard, so I mean, he hasn't been shooting as much. Derek White, I think, has kind of passed him in that regard, but he's still a great defensive guard. I mean, he's right up there.
The things he does don't show up in the box score. I love those kinds of guys.
Okay, Marcus Smart. yeah, sure. I mean, that's people do say that about all sorts of players. I don't think you're hearing a lot of that about these Celtics these days.
No.
Just everybody in the role that they're in seems to be thriving. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and we started debating even before the season, it was about nobody fears them, or did people build to beat them or not build to beat them, blah blah blah. Then I mean, we get back to the philosophical things that we always talk about, the threes, the threes versus twos and Missoula. But I feel like for them, we manufacture questions. We started that before the season, like, what's your biggest fear? Well, it's Porzingis's health.
Yeah, the big men, right.
It's I don't know, Brown and Tatum and egos down the road. I don't even know.
I don't even care about that anymore.
You shouldn't.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
I think this Celtics team is more cohesive. Is that, I don't know if that's the right way I want to describe it, is tighter. I think this team, and it should be, you won together, so I think there's a certain, like, relaxation or breath. Okay, the pressure's kind of off. And I think you can see that Jaylen Brown is more comfortable in his own skin. Joe Mazzulla is more comfortable in his own skin. I think Jason Tatum seems looser this year, right?
Yep.
Like, all these guys seem looser, and that's good. Now, the pressure will build at some point as you get into the postseason. You know, when we had
NBA Cup, I got the semis coming up here.
Did you see the orange court last night, which wasn't orange enough for my liking?
The Suns?
Phoenix, yeah.
I didn't.
It wasn't bright enough.
No?
It was almost like a peach more than a bright
Your
orange.
Your complaint with these courts is that they're not bright
Just
enough.
Just that one. I thought because The other courts had been so bright. The Celtics green, the Wizards red.
Red, yeah.
It was really bright.
It's like Kenny Rogers Roasters.
I actually saw on Twitter, starting soon on TNT, Orange Court in Phoenix, and I went to it, and I put my... And I was like, it's not... Because I love orange. It's my favorite color. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to pop. I wanted to go get my sunglasses and put them on. It didn't pop. It was kind of peachy.
You might be the only person I've ever heard have that take, that they're not bright enough.
Yeah. No, I want...
And hey, I'm proud of you for sticking your neck out on that, but...
I wanted more brightness. If you're going to give me orange, I want to have to, like,
burn my
sideways.
Retinas. Make it hurt to watch this basketball game.
Might be the only person I know whose favorite color is orange. I don't think I've ever heard that one.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that not
my favorite color is orange?
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people whose favorite color is
red.
Orange. Were you going to say black?
That's some people.
That's
like
a dark person.
No, gothic people, yeah.
I got doubts about that
like
person.
Goths? Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I don't know a lot of
so
people.
I've never heard orange.
Who like orange the most. You don't wear a lot of orange for someone who likes it so much.
So it's hard to pull off some of the orange. I had the windbreaker I actually wore, I think, earlier this week or something. Yep. It's usually visors, sneakers, mm-hmm. something. What do you think of an orange truck?
That's bold.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Like something my son would play with.
Got to go to the Department of Corny.
Why is that
to
corny?
Check in? I'm not saying that it's necessarily.
What's corny about an orange
would
truck?
Have to check in with the department.
I'll go with abnormal.
Orange truck, it's loud. I'd say that. You see an orange truck, you notice
it's a statement. Yeah. You're saying something.
I also feel like it's a chance that an increased tickets.
Exactly right. The cop's going to remember that orange truck. Oh yeah, it's this guy.
I got absolutely the first one getting yanked
with the
on
orange
the pipe.
Truck. Here he goes. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll stick with like the gray, silver, or whatever. Now
I always thought that about like vanity plates too. You spend extra money just to get more attention, right? You know, who's really paying attention to those other than the police? I know in New Hampshire, I think, it's not any extra money to get those. You can just get whatever you want.
Because there's like four people up there.
Right. But yeah, in general.
Sorry, New Hampshire.
I always thought it was... I saw a guy that was driving around in a pickup truck and his license plate said, re-up man. And I was like...
That's questionable.
Why would you put that on your car for everyone to see? Like, if I'm a cop and I see the re-up man go by, I'd be like, wonder where he's going. Let's follow him for a few miles. Let's see where the re-up
mean?
Man's going.
I don't know what that means.
Re-up?
Yeah.
I'll tell you off the air.
To get more, it could be anything.
Why am I never in on the joke?
To stock up.
To stock up on
We need to
something.
Re-up on toilet paper.
Yeah, we need to re-up
on
drugs.
More toilet paper.
Well,
that's usually
okay.
what
Okay, that's clearly not what you guys are insinuating. Hart, I'm with you on this one. I'm missing
Thanks.
This one.
I need a lame-o with me.
You ever watch The Wire? You ever watch The Wire?
No.
Oh, jeez. All right. There's a lot of re-up men in The Wire. Let me put it that way.
Okay, so it's drugs. Just say it's your drug guy.
Sure. I don't know if that... I don't
now
think the guy
sense.
Was a drug guy, but it just seems like that's the insinuation I would take from
I
it.
I always have trouble with those. Sometimes you can read them in different ways, depending on where you kind of break up the words. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, like, you know, which they meant.
I know in Virginia there's this viral one where it was like, you know those special plates they have? And it says like children first. And someone in Virginia made their vanity plate say eat the
Jesus.
Well, that was funny. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Jay in North Carolina. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, guys. Speaking of entertainment value, that's why I listen to your show.
Thank you, Jay.
You guys are the entertainment value.
Appreciate that.
Thanks.
But listen, have a good Thanksgiving.
You too.
I wanted to tell you that my sister made the mistake of saying that she'll take me out to dinner with her credit card, and that's going to be a big mistake.
Nice.
That's okay.
Where are we going? Where are we going with the credit? Like, what type of cuisine are we going for here, Jay?
Golden Corral.
Oh, hello.
But listen.
Making a couple trips to that buffet.
My Christmas wish is that we get a young Logan Mankins and a young Matt Light for the offensive line. Somewhere help poor Drake May out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jay. My Christmas wish is that your sister gives me her credit card so I can go to Golden Corral and just go to town. Because, you know, I haven't been to a Golden Corral since I was in college.
Are there any around here?
I don't know. But I remember driving back. So I used to drive from Colorado back and forth. I don't like, you know, I didn't like to fly if I couldn't. And you pass about 800 million Golden Corrals. And I would stop at just about all of them. They got the little gift shop. Food is immaculate. And, that would be fun.
How long would that take you? Like 30 hours?
Yeah, I'd stop in like Chicago and then go the rest of the way the next day. But yeah, it was a long drive. But a fun one. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Brian Scalabrini will join the show right after Dan Ball.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple.
For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Get you caught up on what's trending. Boston Celtics, the one team to be thankful for here in the Commonwealth. It's Christian Arcand. It's Andy Hart. It's WEEI Afternoons. ESPN has released their power rankings for the week.
Ooh, I'm titillated.
The Celtics are up to number two. The Golden State Warriors dropped off down to four.
Mm-hmm.
And they were usurped by the Oklahoma City Thunder in the three spot. The Celtics moved up from 3-2. The Cleveland Cavaliers remain at number one with a record of 17-1. By the way, the Cavaliers, I didn't know this, only have two players in their rotation who are 30 or older. Caris LeVert and George Niang, and that's it. That is a pretty good position to be in right there. It's not like the Celtics are super old or anything like that, but the Cavaliers' entire rotation is 30 and younger. Like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good situation. And they, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what their contract situation's like for all those guys. I know Mitchell's making a lot of money. I think Mobley just re-upped. So they may find themselves running into apron issues and all that other crap that, you know, the Celtics had to sell the team for. So we'll see what ends up going on there. But I think that, in general, things are setting up here. If Cleveland can keep it up, and I think that they can. I mean, we're 18 games into the season. They've lost one game. If Cleveland can keep at this, you might be looking at a not just this year rivalry, but a multi-year kind of back and forth sort of LeBron versus Curry type of thing. I think that's possible. The last time there was something like this that I thought was going to be the next rivalry of the NBA was Oklahoma City and Miami, because the two of them, you looked at them and you were like, okay, well, Miami's in place for a long time. They got three superstars, and they're just going to be running roughshod over the East for however long LeBron James wants to stay there. And in Oklahoma City, you had Kevin Durant, you had James Harden, Russell Westbrook, all three of them together, and then they all said, get me the hell out of Oklahoma City. But before that, it seemed like they were going to be they were all young, right? They were all in their early 20s, and they were nasty, and they went right to the finals. And then Durant went left for Golden State, and the whole team disintegrated. But before that, it seemed like those were going to be two trains that kept crashing into each other. And I wonder if there's a possibility of that now with the Celtics and the Cavaliers.
Certainly on paper there is. And, you know, I think it took steps in that direction the first game. You know, you got to build a little, I don't know, continuity of angst,
yeah.
I guess I'll describe it as. And then obviously you got to meet in the playoffs. You got to have more playoff battles there with everybody hopefully healthy this time around so you can have a legit battle. I do think, so we talked yesterday about the Celtics being the measuring stick and how we all agree that measuring sticks are good.
Yes.
Having the king of the mountain is good.
Absolutely.
You also need some regular challengers, in my opinion. Some building of continuity of battles in the postseason, right? Some up-and-comers that chip away, and it's not quite their time, but are they going to break through the Celtics? And Cleveland could be one of those. I mean, I think people want to anoint Anthony Edwards and company, one mm-hmm. of those in Minnesota. Like, Oklahoma City could be one of those now again. The Nuggets, I think, are back with Jokic, right? Like, they're back in the conversation after the slow start to the year. But that second tier will be important to me for sort of the overall entertainment value of this Celtics run for however long it mm-hmm. lasts.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that could change, too. You know, Giannis trade or Philly blows it up again. Maybe Embiid is gone. Although, if remember last week, didn't Scal say Embiid's, like, done?
Yeah.
He thinks Embiid just sucks now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Found that weird.
I think I read somewhere the Sixers are now just trying to win, like, 35 games this year or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Ouch, babe.
Hold on one second. This was on ESPN. It was an insider content brag. And here is what they said about the 76ers. Oh, how many they need for the play-in, right? This is how many they need just to make the play-in tournament. Ramona Shelburne reported on the Sixers, who've gone from a home run offseason to a shipwreck of a season. After widely being seen as one of the Eastern Conference favorites, they're now merely hoping to stay in the mix for a play-in berth. That means top 10, all right? In the top 10. The 10 seed makes it into this thing.
And based on their history, it'll be a play-out.
Right.
And they always lose with the season on the line.
They're on the outside looking in right now. How probable is that win total for a club that currently stands at 3-14? It's like the Patriots. And is relying on a pair of over 30 stars with long injury histories. ESPN's Basketball Power Index, or BPI, projects the Sixers to finish with 36.3 wins and a 78% probability of getting to at least 33. But that comes with a massive caveat. The model's forward-looking metrics aren't equipped to analyze projected injuries to Joel Embiid and Paul George that they might have as the season continues. Instead, it treats those two like the rest of the players in the league in assuming they're going to be available to play until they're ultimately ruled out. The system also bakes in estimates for how well the duo will play when they're on the court. Neither George nor Embiid has played anywhere near their All-NBA standard, a reality nearly as troubling as their lack of availability. For all the focus on the notion of needing at least 33 wins to reach the play-in, ESPN's model believes there is a 14% chance the Sixers could amass that number and still come up short. Either way, the fact that we're dealing with this question at all suggests Philadelphia is running out of time, a stunning truth given the season hasn't made it to December yet. That's great.
They should probably stop trusting the process.
I'll tell you what, that warms my heart. You know, I talk about how there's not much to be thankful for around here. Be thankful you're not in Philadelphia right now with these 76ers. My goodness.
What a terrible run. Yeah. Like, that they kept believing they were on the cusp of something, and it was going to Embiid and Simmons and, like, the various...
Jahlil Okafor and
Markel
those guys.
Fultz.
Oh, yeah.
You know how many times they were worked up into a lather only to be disappointed in the end? Kind of feel bad. Well, I don't really feel bad.
I don't feel bad at all.
And I don't really like Embiid.
Yeah. Forget about it.
He's not very likable. Screw
him. He's not. All right. Time to talk to Brian Scalabrine, who is very likable, and he's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, Perfecting the Art of Fresh, also by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by FindMassMoney.gov. Mr. Scalabrine, how are we doing today, sir?
Great. It's a good little break for me before Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'm doing well. You guys?
We're doing great, and it's great to be on with you here the day before Thanksgiving. I want to hear about what your Thanksgiving's going to be like, but first of all, we were just reading some numbers about the Philadelphia 76ers. We talked to you about them last week, and we'll get to the Celtics, obviously, but are you enjoying the downfall of the 76ers, or do you prefer that they're competitive and that the Celtics have more kind of peers right now?
I mean, I don't really do that. Like, I can only just, like... It's like, I don't root for people to be bad or anything like that. Uh-huh. And I also don't root to be right. Like, when I was like, you're not going to be good with Joel Embiid and Paul George. The NBA is shifting. It's becoming a faster league, a more cutting league. And you play slow and methodical. I think I was on air with you guys a couple weeks ago. I said, like, the Bucks, they play a little bit methodical. And, like, that doesn't work anymore. It's just like there's been adjustments to the game. And so... my boy Tim Bontemps is like, best big three in the NBA. I called him out. I said, you're crazy. That's not the best big three. They play too slow. Behold, it's just like those guys are not good enough. They're not fast enough. They don't play fast enough. It's more than just Joel Embiid's injury.
The Porzingis return, was it what you expected, better than you expected? What did you make of it all?
It was a reminder that no one's beating us in four games, in a seven-game series. I mean, Horford's awesome. Like, Horford's been awesome. But when Porzingis picks and pops from 30 feet out, you have no choice. Like, you're either going to put two on Tatum and give him a three, or, you know, you're going to put, you're going to shade your guy towards Porzingis, and Tatum's going to turn the corner, or Brown's going to turn the corner. So, it's a big overreaction like that night. Clippers were, you know, they were dogging it, whatever the reason is. But we look amazing. I don't know. I don't see how, if we're healthy, I don't see how anybody can beat us when we're all playing at this level. And I think it was also a reminder, like watching Tatum and Brown with Porzingis out there, they've improved a ton. They've improved White, Holiday, all those guys have all improved. And then Porzingis is coming back.
It's funny you bring that up. If you were a coach of an opposing team, and let's say, I don't know, you have a generic NBA good playoff roster, how would you approach it? How would you try to make the Celtics uncomfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's only one way to kind of do that, and they've been cracking that code as well. It's, you know, it's funnel everybody to a shot blocking big, rotate around it, rotate and take away threes, rely on having three centers that could just like defend a rim. Like before Indiana got hurt, they had like kind of the roster that can do that. I don't know how physical they are on the perimeter, but you need like physical defenders. It'll be like if and like just the makeup of like the Nets with three shot blocking Claxtons, right? Like you would need something like that and make the Celtics earn it from the free throw line, put them on the line, make them make a ton of plays at the rim. That's really the only way I would think that you can beat them. But their decision making is elite, like the way that they move the ball and they read the rim. And, you know, like it's like being in rotation is a losing proposition for any team, especially when you're playing a team that can really move the ball the way they do. So that is I feel like that's the only way to do it. But I still feel like the way that Tatum and Brown are playing and the way that they're reading the game, then I still think that they would get wide open shots and you would just hope that they would miss them.
How would you characterize Joe Mazzulla in his third season now, his second season, I should say? Or no, wait, it is his third season. Yeah. How would you characterize his ability to adjust to those things you were just describing? I mean, you did see Golden State sort of blitzing Jason Tatum, guys defending mm-hmm. the three-point line more so. A very analytic-driven head coach in Joe Mazzulla. How do you think he's been handling all that, and how do you think the team's been responding?
Well, let me just, like, argue the analytic, you know, part of it. Like, he always says, like, threes are worth more than twos and all that stuff, but you know, I think what they're trying to do is get layups and dunks. Like, I do believe they're trying to get layups. He's just not going to, like, get mad at the guy when the guy takes, you know, when they take 53s, right? But, you know, I think Joe has doubled down on the reads. And I think that, so reading the game, like Tatum and Brown getting off the ball, you see behind-the-back dribbles or passes by Tatum. So they doubled down on ball movement. They doubled down on three-point shooting. And for the most part, like, the only times I feel like we're not, like, phenomenal is when, you know, we have those lulls, like, in the second and third, right? And then I'll give you credit. Like, the Golden State game and blitzing Tatum, that was something new, and they did it super aggressively. So that would be something that you'd have to deal with. But, you know, if Porzingis is out there, that's like I think that's a non-starter when it comes to just leaving Porzingis that wide open. But overall, like, I think that he's took what he did last year or year one and took what he did last year. And I think he's doubled down on it. And I think we're better for it. And the biggest thing doesn't really matter what we think. It matters what the players think. And the players have bought into it as well. So if those guys have bought into it, you just have to assume that this team is going to be really good because of it.
Derek White is fifth, I think, right now in plus minus in the NBA. I think you guys at NBC Sports Boston last year had a little campaign to try to get him an all-star nod. Could this be the year? Could he be an all-star for the Celtics this year?
Oh, you know what? I don't usually do that until, like, January. But, like, I have to really, like, go through the Eastern Conference and look at it. But I can't, like, name three guards that you think are better. It's, like, really hard. Is someone going to pick, like, let's say Milwaukee's been playing better, but is someone going to pick Damian Lillard over a third Celtics? Maybe. So I maybe this is the year that he does it. But I think you should re-ask that question to me a little bit later in December, January, because a lot of stuff could happen. You know, what's going on with Philadelphia? Tyrese Maxey, you know, is Orlando Bancaro going to play enough? Like, you just got to go through the list and, like, list the 12 or 13 guys that are going to make it and decide, like, if Derek White's going to do it. It's not going to be voting. We know that, right? So let's scratch that off the list. It's weird how we make a big campaign about vote for this guy, vote for that guy. It always comes down to the coaches, which I disagree with, by the way. I think you should, like, pick 10 and then the coaches pick 2. But, you know, whatever. That's just the way that they do it. But, you know, ask me again in December, and I'll dive into it. And then we'll take a look. But I don't see why not. His numbers are incredible. His fourth quarter numbers, and I think coaches value Derek White. I will say this. I don't think the defenses are tilting as much to Tatum and Brown and leaving Derek White as much in the fourth quarter, I think at least the last 2 weeks. So, you know, his impact has been pretty high for this team.
I'm not a analytics guy, numbers guy in most sports, but I brought up plus minus, and when I was looking that up, it sort of jumped out at me. Like, the Knicks have 5 of the top 14 plus minus guys in the NBA, and obviously the Celtics got a couple in the top 5. Like, how much stock do you put in plus minus stats? Do you look at those? Do they tell you a story? Like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I can help you with that one. Like,
the Knicks like to play guys together, and then they'll play like a second unit.
Okay.
Right? It's the guys who have to blend lineups, right? Like, when you put a stud player with a backup group. Now, our backup groups are pretty awesome. Like, we have, like, that Tatum, Pritchard, Hauser, Horford, right? That's a great group, right? So a lot of times, like, when you see high plus minus guys from, like, a group of people, it means there's not a lot of mixing. Or, you know, you don't have a – you don't put, like, Jalen Brunson out there with five bench – or four bench guys, right?
Right.
So his plus minus stays pretty high, right? That's kind of how it works. And most star players, their plus minus takes a hit when they go to the bench. But ours kind of works. But, you know, I look at plus minus over the course of a year. We do look at it from a game-to-game basis, but – over the course of a year, like net rating plus minus, it just shows that you're a winning player. But it also shows that you got a really good team and you're on a really good team. So, like, you know, we've had guys coming off the bench that had high plus minuses. That's huge for a team that shows like a championship level of a team.
Scal, who's your favorite non-Celtics team to watch, and who's your favorite non-Celtics player to watch in the NBA this year?
Jokic for sure. Like, it's not even close. Like, I will watch him. My son loves Curry, so I get a lot of Curry at the house because he wakes up in the morning and he watches. We have the league pass, so he'll watch the game from the night before. One of my favorite teams right now, Memphis, Oklahoma City. Those guys are good. I got to be honest with you. Like, I haven't found. Oh, Cleveland. Cleveland's actually really good. I watch Cleveland a lot. So, like, those would probably be the top teams. I dabble a little bit with Brooklyn because of their cutting, and I'm like, you know, I coach my AAU team. I'm always looking for new ideas. I think they're one of the better cutting teams in the NBA. So, like, with that, but I think, like, those kind of groups, they play super hard. I kind of tend towards teams that move the ball and bomb threes. I just kind of like that. So I kind of watch teams like that. And then with Memphis, you know, you have Ja Morant. It's like a freak of nature, so you never know what he's capable of doing.
We've been seeing clips online after some of these more recent games, Clippers, Minnesota. And I don't know how close you are, if you even talk with any of these opposing broadcast teams, but it seems like they're getting really frustrated with the Celtics. Like, it just, I can't believe this. They're spending all this money. They're going to be in the second apron. They're going to have to trade Porzingis. They're mad that Pritchard's hitting threes. Like, does it seem like the Celtics are breaking the brains of opposing fan bases and broadcasters to you?
Yeah. We talk about that a lot on the morning show as well. Like, people don't like the fact that they're good. And it's like, and the fact that they move the ball, a lot of people in general don't like 3-point shooting, and they do it, but they're actually really good at it. So everyone's trying to play catch up to the Celtics, and they're bombing threes, yet they're going like 9 for 45 against them. So yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. I think people don't love the Celtics the way they do things. And, you know, like, I don't know what's not to like. Like, name a player on this team that's unlikable. People have said other, you know, guys are unlikable, but I look at this group as like, you got star players who grew up and they didn't share the ball, and now they do. You have a Hall of Famer like a Drew Holiday who makes sacrifices and all the time, and defensively he's awesome. You got Porzingis who bounced around and loving life here. Al Horford, like one of our generation's most winning player who's never won a championship, finally did. It's like, Peyton Pritchard, who doesn't love him? Hauser, like, he's a good team. I don't understand. A lot of people even like Kata league-wide. So, you know, my circles are different than what, like, opposing fans, but I do think there's a lot to like about this team. And I do believe that people are getting bored with the Celtics and how good they are, because I think it's just a reminder. Everybody's having these teams and free agency and all that, and Porzingis comes back, and just how we let off this interview, I think most people are saying, like, you're not beating the Boston Celtics in 7 games unless something drastic happens.
I'm assuming you saw that Cooper Flagg dunk that went viral last night. So I was just wondering, mm-hmm. He's the projected number one overall pick in the draft. How much have you crossed paths with him, and what type of a potential franchise player do you think he is?
Yeah, so you guys know my story with Cooper Flagg or not really?
I do not.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So, like, you know, when he was in Maine,
yep.
I know his workout coach really well, and he tells me, like, man, I got this 14-year-old that's here, and he plays against college kids and he dominates them. I'm like, get the hell out of here. Yeah, I use like a different 4-letter word, right? And I was like, well, all right, I got a good gym. Like, this gym that we got a bunch of, you know, 18-19-year-old kids. I've been working, you know, to stay in shape. I work out with this group. Like, we have like this cool understanding, whatever. So he comes down to our pickup at 14. and he just dominates, right? I'm like, yo, this guy's from a different planet, man. I've never seen anything like that, right? And it's not just the dunks and everything like that. It's more than that. So I called Duke up the next day. You know, I said, yo, I got this kid that he wants to go to Duke. And it kind of blew me off, right? So John Shire blew me off at first. Then I called USA Basketball, and I said, yo, I got this kid. You guys got to check him out. And they kind of, like, scoffed at it. I don't know. White kid from Maine. Like, how good can he be? You know, that whole thing. Until they saw him down at EYBL Peach Jam. And those guys now, they hit me up. They're like, yo, man, thanks. Thanks for the connection. So, you know, his brother this summer played on my AAU team, and he lived with me. So I just, because, you know, the parents were going all over the place with Cooper and, like, USA Basketball and stuff. So Ace, who now is committed to UMaine, he just kind of, like, worked out with me three times a day, just kind of lived here, and it was good, man. I have a good relationship with the family and everything like that. I think he'll be a projected number one pick. I don't know, like, I really don't know how good he's going to be. Like, are you a Hall of Famer? Are you an All-Star? Are you a starter? I have no idea. I just know, like, when it comes to basketball, he learns it so fast. So whatever you're seeing right now, I think he'll be 10x better by the time March rolls around.
All right, Scal, there's no game tomorrow. You don't have to work again until Friday. What's your Thanksgiving spread looking like, and what's the first side you're going for?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My family wanted to go back to Seattle, and we got to go to Chicago. So I'm actually catching a flight tomorrow, 8:30 in the morning to Chicago.
Woof.
And I'm doing sort of Thanksgiving solo, and the family's out in Seattle. So we've already kind of celebrated it. I'm not actually a really simple guy. Like, I like turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, like the whole thing. Like, there's nothing like that that's different. It's just, I think, the way that my wife would prepare all that stuff. So standard Thanksgiving guy. The only thing I do is a little bit different. We usually eat at like 1 o'clock. We start cooking early and stuff like that. But that's just, Scalabrini tradition is just having Thanksgiving dinner, which would be like more like lunch for us.
All right, very good. Brian Scalabrini, safe travels tomorrow. Have a very good holiday, and we'll talk to you again next week, okay?
Sounds good. See you.
All right, Brian Scalabrini joining us here on WEEI Afternoon. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got a new guest corner here as Danny Ventura, Boston Herald, will join us here in just a few minutes, and we will discuss all of the Turkey Bowl festivities going on in high school football all around the state right after this. WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, and we are joined on the line right now by Danny Ventura of the Boston Herald, the guru when it comes to high school sports here in the area. And this is probably the biggest day of high school sports, certainly for football, as we have Andy Hart in full uniform right now, Danny, and he's dressed up for you, just so you know. He is wearing a helmet. He has his Letterman jacket on. He's wearing a jersey. I believe he is wearing a cup. And this is all in honor of you joining the show today, Danny. So I hope you at least appreciate that.
I hope he's wearing a Dartmouth uniform.
You're damn right I am.
We put your mic on there, genius. Come on. There we go.
You're damn right I am. Numbers. I got my. This is all my stuff. It's all 30 years old.
There you go.
This is.
Let's go.
There you go. Now I'm motivated to do this.
It was a bit of a struggle at first. We have some games tonight. Obviously, there's all the Turkey Bowl games tomorrow. Danny, what's on the radar? What should people be looking around for? Anybody who plans on traveling tomorrow, what can they expect in some of these matchups?
I mean, I think there's some, you know, I think there are some good ones. And one of the big ones that does jump out, you know, in Andy's area, Dartmouth-Fairhaven, I think it's one of the best games of the day. You've got a Fairhaven team who's going to the Super Bowl. They've got a running back, Justin Mox, who's broken the state record, 109 touchdowns for his career. And Dartmouth, I hear, has a pretty good quarterback. That's what I've heard. I mean, my moles tell me they got a decent quarterback.
I heard he's all right.
Yeah. You know, another one is the Mansfield-Foxborough game. There's two teams going to the Super Bowl, but there's a little more added incentive for Mansfield as Mike Redding is going for his 300th win, which, I mean, I think he would love, and he'd always want to do it as soon as possible, but I'm sure he would like to get it out of the way so there'd be no talk about it leading into the Super Bowl, which is going to be a tough matchup for them with North Attleboro. You know, you look, the Catholic Conference is always two big ones. You got St. John's Prep, Xavarian. The Xavarian going to the Super Bowl. So for St. John's Prep, it's probably a Super Bowl game for them. They'd love nothing more than to beat Xavarian. And I think the same holds true in the Boston area with Catholic Memorial and BC High. Catholic Memorial going to the Division II Super Bowl. And BC High, who's really had a nice bounce back year under their first year head coach, Paul Zukauskas, they would love to, you know, put a blemish on CM's record heading into Gillette. Those are some of the big ones we're looking at. You get a lot of the traditional, the two Lynns, the two Quincy's, Malden, Medford, Needham, Wellesley. I mean, it's a special day. I mean, you pretty much can go anywhere in Eastern Mass, and you're going to find a big game.
Danny, it's funny you mentioned Super Bowl with a lot of those matchups early on, and I know this is probably a longer answer than we have time for today, but are you one that is critical of this format that has led to these Thanksgiving games before the Super Bowl, in between the playoffs, or do you think in general that schools, teams, coaches have made the best of it?
I think they have made the best of it. Unfortunately in this state, if you really want a perfect playoff system, you have to get rid of Thanksgiving. And I don't think there's an appetite for that. So as long as Thanksgiving is in play, I think it's very hard to do it, create the perfect system. I know some people, there was a proposal that was out there that got shot down. They want to go into December, which, I mean, I think you're really going to alienate the winter coaches because you're taking more time into them. So, I mean, again, Thanksgiving being, the fly in the ointment, I think this is as good as you're going to get for now.
Well, I mean, listen, it's a big tradition, and it's going to be a tough one to suddenly just up and change. Some of these Turkey Bowl games in Massachusetts go back to the turn of the century, even before that, right? Isn't that true? Isn't some of these Massachusetts Turkey Bowl games like the longest running in the whole country?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Needham Wellesley, the longest, Boston Latin and English New Mission. Those are two just for starters have played well over 100 years. I mean, are you going to go tell the administrators, we want a perfect playoff system. See you later on Thanksgiving. I mean, I don't think they're going to do that. And for a lot of these schools, I mean, I know that it's kind of, diminished, with the demographics or what have you. Some of these so-called rivalries that are really become one-sided over the years. But Needham Wellesley, I mean, that's a big moneymaker for them because they bring good crowds. The games are usually competitive. And, it's fairly even, a couple of years, Wellesley might have the upper hand, then Needham might have the upper hand. So to tell these communities, we really want, we want to put a good playoff system ahead of Thanksgiving, I think it's tough.
You mentioned Justin Marks, who'll be on the other side for my Dartmouth Indians tomorrow, and he rewrote the record books with the touchdown record. Who are some other guys that have been standouts, whether they're having great years or great careers, that might be kind of coming to an end on Thanksgiving that you would want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I think there are a couple of guys that will go on after Thanksgiving. I look at Aiden Williams at Needham, who really has had a phenomenal year. Needham is a team that a lot of people, because they beat St. John's Prep, they look to them, this is a Cinderella story, but it's really not. I mean, they're a darn good team. They've won, I think, if memory serves, 20 out of their last 22. And the only two losses came to Milton and Xavierian, both who won Super Bowls last year. And they both were, the Milton game was a one-point game, and the Xavierian game was a three-point game in the state semifinals. So Needham getting to the Super Bowl, and I know there's the big thing with the Catholics or what have you, but Needham has proven they belong. And Aiden Williams has had a great year. Going north of Boston, Methuen's Shane Eason, he's had a fabulous four-year career. His career will end against Drakett. But, I mean, numbers-wise, he's been terrific. Catholic Memorial's got the running back, Mekhi Dodd, who's going to Boston College. He's had a fabulous year as well. I mean, those are a couple of the marquee names that, you see pretty much, week in and week out in Eastern Mass.
Danny, where do you think high school football in Massachusetts, and I guess New England as a whole, kind of stacks up? I know we're not California or Texas or some of those places, but there's been a little bit of an uptick of guys, quarterbacks, going to big-time football, ACC and SEC-type guys. Where do you think Massachusetts football in particular sort of stacks up nationally?
I do think it gets underrated because a lot of it is due to the fact Massachusetts is a small state. People say, well, it's not Texas. Well, yeah, I think Texas might have a few more people in the state than Massachusetts. The same thing with Florida. But I think if you look at the upper echelon Massachusetts recruits, they're getting guys who are going, to D1s, and you're getting guys landing in the NFL. I mean, you look at almost every roster. There's almost every time you look at an NFL game, you know, there's a local guy here. There's Isaiah Likely from Everett playing for Baltimore. Noah Gray, you know, tight end from Central Mass, has been fantastic for the Chiefs. You know, and you can go all over the place and you can find guys who are making their mark in the NFL. So, yeah. I mean, is there as much as, say, Texas? No, but nor should it be. But I think the upper echelon guys, and I think what happens is why some of these colleges like to recruit them is they do have a chip on their shoulder because they go to these places. People may, well, he's from Massachusetts. He can't be that good. And they find out, yeah, you know what? This kid's pretty good.
One of those guys went to my alma mater, Zach Zinter, who ended up going to Michigan. I'm a BBNN Knight proud alum. How'd they do this year? I haven't really been following along. And how's the ISL looking this season?
BBNN actually won. They actually got to the their star running back, Bo McCormick, is going to Boston College. So, I mean, under Coach Willie and prior to that, John Pappas, they've had a great program. Tabor has really come on under Jeff Moore. I think what you get in the ISL is I don't think they have the depth because the schools aren't as big, but their top guys are all getting recruited by Division I schools.
So, Danny, if...
It's a lot different from when I went there, I'll tell you that. The BBN football team was terrible when I was there, so that's nice to hear.
Danny, if you could make a list of, like, the must-sees, like 3, 4... You know, must-see games, Thanksgiving, state of Massachusetts, whether it's because of the matchup for this year or if it's just the historical value, what would that list be?
I mean, to me, Needham-Wellesley is always, you know, I'm a historical guy, I'm an old man, so I like, you know, to me, Needham-Wellesley is the one that jumps out because that's gotten national recognition because of how long they've played. I mean, the game hasn't been, it's not as good as it once was, but you know, Latin English / New Mission is always another game from a historical thing. I look at St. John's Preservarian as a game that, you know, it's always a marquee matchup. Even if there's nothing on the line, those two teams play hard. I mean, that's always a quality game. You look at, you know, the Winchester-Woburn game. You know, it's another one that just jumps out. You know, you look at King Philip, Franklin. You got Mansfield-Foxborough. I mean, those are games that always jump out that, you know, if you go to that game, you're going to see something good.
Well, we'll leave it right there then. Danny Ventura, thanks so much for the time today. We certainly appreciate you taking some time to come on and talk with us. It's been a lot of fun.
Please. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Danny.
Very good. Danny Ventura there. You can check out his stuff in the Boston Herald. And he is the guy when it comes to the local sports
here,
high school sports here in the area. He's the guy you want to know. He's the guy who knows everything, as you could just hear right there. People on the Twitch line are saying that I have the green light to tackle you, Andy, if I wanted to. I'm not saying I want to, but if I wanted to.
I got a helmet on. I'm protected.
Yeah? Okay. I mean, you know. I haven't tackled anybody since freshman football.
Sounds like you never tackled anybody.
No, I got him by the ankle. I'd have to go, you know, shoulder first here. I may be a little out of practice, but yeah, we can figure it out. Do a little Oklahoma drill during the break. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we return, we'll go behind the glass.